This is The Inside Story, a program of biblical teaching that we trust will bring insight into God's Word and application to your life today.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Inside Story. Chapter 3 of the book of James is an absolutely fascinating chapter because of what comes before it and what comes after it. The first two chapters have to do with really the matter of hypocrisy. The matter of claiming to be a man or a woman of faith and failing to carry it out in any practical way whatsoever. James challenges each and every one of us with the statement that that faith which doesn't result in action is no faith at all. Faith without works is dead. The issue, in other words, of the first two chapters is empty faith, hypocritical faith. He says in chapter 2, verse 19, you believe that God is one, you do well, even the demons believe, and shudder. There is a kind of right doctrine which has absolutely nothing to do with saving faith. Faith which doesn't change lives is no faith. It's empty, it's void, it's barren. Chapters 4 and 5 of this little letter have to do with humility. And again, the issue is faith. But it's the necessity of the prerequisite for humility, and we're going to come to that tomorrow. In between hypocrisy and humility comes chapter 3. And the subject of chapter 3 is the tongue. He begins by saying, let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, for you know that we who teach shall be judged with greater strictness. For we all make many mistakes, and if anyone makes no mistakes in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body also. If we put bits into the mouths of horses, that they may obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So the tongue is a little member, and boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. Your tongue is a small fire in your mouth, and so is mine. We can have a kind of spurious faith where we're confessing all the right things, and yet they're not affecting our lives. We can have, on the other hand, a kind of pride and arrogance which disembowels faith and turns it into something very different from what God intended it to be. In both cases, the tongue is absolutely at the center of things. Absolutely at the center of things. He says in verse 6, the tongue is a fire. It is a fire, and the tongue is an unrighteous world among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the cycle of nature, and set on fire by hell. That's pretty strong language, isn't it? For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by humankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. You ever seen one of these tremendous, intercontinental airplanes? Double-deck airplanes, 747, hundreds of people, 500 people flying intercontinental or transatlantic or what have you. And the pilot lifts that thing with tens of thousands of pounds on it, takes it off of that little strip of concrete, flies it in a predetermined pattern, is absolutely in control of tons of machinery at all times, brings it down safely onto another little strip of concrete, lands it, brings it right up to the gate, and a staircase comes out from the side of the building, and passengers walk off, and it's as if they've been in a living room the whole way. And that pilot has been in control of 500 lives and tons of machinery, and has crossed time zones and language barriers and geopolitical barriers, and has come down into another place at another time in another part of the world, absolutely in control, and he comes out unable to control his tongue, cursing, swearing. You ever seen it? Or a surgeon who's able to take a scalpel and separate living tissues and nerve endings and cut between bone and marrow and can't control his tongue? Or you, in whatever you're doing, whatever your job is, master of whatever it is that you're master of and unable to control your tongue? The tongue is an unrighteous world among our members. Verse 9, with it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who are made in the likeness of God. What hypocrisy. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brethren, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening fresh water and brackish? Can a fig tree, my brethren, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. There's a rebuke here. There's a strong rebuke that you and I need to hear, and we don't only need to hear it, we need to do something about it. James moves from hypocrisy to a much, much deeper issue. That's the issue of self-control. And the hardest part of our self to control is our tongue. I remember Billy Graham commenting during the Watergate revelations. You remember that when we first realized that President Nixon had had those tape machines going all the time, the explosion that there was across the country as we learned about that the whole thing was down on tape. And Billy Graham made the comment that it's as if each one of us had a tape recorder hanging around our necks for our whole life. He said God won't need any other evidence against any of us than to play back what we've insisted upon for others. James says, let not many of you become teachers, my brethren. We teachers will be judged with greater strictness, both because others' lives are shaped by what we say, and because if we know it well enough to insist upon it for others, we ought to know it well enough to follow it ourselves. And yet, do we? I can sit here and tell you all these marvelous things, and how well do I live up to them myself? It's a sobering passage to somebody who majors in teaching. I know better than I do. I teach better than I live. And so do you, I guarantee. I remember as a very small boy, I got involved in some petty thievery. We had a drugstore at the end of my street, and the drugstore owner was trusting enough to let people come up and pick up their own newspaper and just leave the money for the newspaper under the mat. And I discovered that one day, and I began helping myself to some of that loose change. Never all of it, just a few cents each day. And I remember coming a few days later. This obviously was weighing upon my conscience. It came very heavily upon me. And my family was facing some financial needs, and I volunteered to help. And my father said, how are you going to help? And I said, I can get money from my secret place. See, there was something inside me that wanted to confess what I'd been doing. I wanted to make it right, and yet I couldn't come out and admit, Dad, I've been stealing. He said, your secret place, what is that? And I told him about the money under the mat, that I'd been helping myself to it. And my father looked at me, put his hands on my shoulders, and he said, didn't you know that was stealing? Oh, stealing? Oh, no, Dad, I didn't know that was stealing. I lied through my teeth. My father determined not to punish me that evening. He wanted me to have a night to think about it, to pray about it, to face up to it. In the meantime, he wanted to talk to my mother about it. One thing my dad always did right, and that was he talked with my mother. They made an agreement at the beginning of their marriage that they would never allow us to play them off one against the other, and they were mighty consistent in that. He talked to her, and you know what he found out from her? That a week earlier, I had asked her about that. How come the drugstore man lets people leave money under the mat where anybody could come steal? I had totally blotted that conversation out of my mind so that when it came around again, oh no, I didn't know that was stealing. I lied through my teeth. My mother happened to remember the conversation. She was my living tape recorder, and all she needed to do was play it back. And you see what happened? I condemned myself. My father came in the next morning, and he said, you wanna go over that one more time? Did you know it was stealing? Oh, no, Dad, I didn't realize there was anything wrong with it. You promised me that you didn't know there was anything wrong with it. I promise you on Cub Scout honor, said I. And I got the spanking of my life. And my father then escorted me down to the drugstore and made me talk to that drugstore owner and tell him what I'd done and promised to pay him back just as fast as I could out of my allowance. I will never forget that experience as long as I live, and I thank God for my father's handling of it. But it illustrates the point, doesn't it? Even as a little boy, I knew better than I did. And my own words condemned me. You know, you could look around at almost any one of us and see what we insist upon for others, and then we turn around and justify in ourselves. That's what James is saying. He moves from a general statement of hypocrisy down to a much deeper issue of controlling ourselves, and the transition point is our tongue. How do you do with your tongue? That same tongue with which we bless God, we turn around and use to curse each other, to blaspheme against the image of God by speaking ill of the creatures of God created in His own image. I need a lot of help in that area, my friend, and I suspect you do as well. When we get a hold of our tongues, the rest will be easy. David said that the tongue is the glory of a man, and yet the irony of it is that we misuse our tongues so easily. May it be your prayer and mine this day, a prayer that we act on in our lives, that we would rededicate our tongues to the glory of God, because that's the inside story.